I think it's especially true in the life of a believer that life is a journey. It begins when God pours out his grace and mercy upon us. When we receive Jesus Christ as our Savior and trust him for the forgiveness and cleansing of our sins, and we walk in obedience to him and to his word. And that journey continues on throughout life and on into eternity when we one day meet Jesus and look at him, who is our King, face to face. Along the journey, God takes us on many side trips, on smaller journeys. Every one of you here today is on a journey. For some, for the youngest among us, you're a student. For others, you are on the road to a new career, a new venture. And for others at the other end of the spectrum, perhaps you have just entered retirement. Some of you are on the road to marriage and parenthood. And for others, you are walking the path of widowhood. For some, the road has taken what could best be described as a turn for the worse, and you find yourself walking into the halls of a hospital, maybe venturing into a cancer clinic, or caring for someone who is. We're all on a journey, but we do not walk alone because we walk with the King. He is ever with us, and he equips us and enables us. Every journey begins with some sort of preparation, and it's true that there are times when the journey that God takes us on gives us very little time to prepare. Fortunately, all of life to that date has been a preparation of some sort, and it helps us to walk the road that unfolds before us. We prepared for our trip to Africa by getting our travel documents in order. That meant our passports, the visas, health cards, and by visiting a travel clinic to receive the necessary inoculations and any medication we might need to take with us. We also needed to make trip plans. We needed our flights booked. We needed hotel or other accommodations made. It's important as well, or it was important for us that we pack the right clothing. When you're in 43 degrees Celsius temperature, you want to make sure that you have the right clothing. And we wanted to be mindful that we were going to be in a culture that was not our own. We wanted to respect what would have been the norm there. So it's good to be prepared. We prepared ourselves for our journey, and then we committed ourselves and our plans to the Lord. Ultimately, the itinerary is in the hands of the one who has taken us on the journey. He is the one who will determine where we will go and what we will do. We submit to him, and we hold on to him tightly as we go. And that is true of each of us, whether we have, as part of our journey, a trip to Africa or not.
I just wanted to start my part here this morning by talking a tiny bit about Project Hannah. And that's not the complete focus this morning, but it is important to understand why and why we went and what we were doing. I think Shelley has already said it's a ministry of compassion and hope to suffering women. And we do that by creating awareness. In a small way, I'm just going to share a little bit about Project Hannah, that's awareness, but also the plight of women. And then we have the radio programs. Transworld Radio is the umbrella organization. We are a global media organization. So media, in this case, is radio programs, and they're called Women of Hope. And then we have a global prayer network, and many of you are part of that. Thank you for that. And then we have Mercy Ministries. These are sort of the practical things that women can do, usually in-country, on the ground, to meet the needs of the women in their particular area. So one of the things that I do is speak to people and share about the plight of women worldwide, and that's part of my job. But also, we are a charity, so I need to be accountable for the funds that are raised. So I need to go to the field and see for myself what's happening. And that was what we did. And I'm sorry, but that just brings it all back. It was a powerful trip for me, and you'll hear more about that. This year, we went to Ivory Coast and Mali. And those are two of the countries in Africa we support. We support others as well. But when we were there, the organizers did a fantastic job, probably a little too fantastic. It was a really grueling schedule. And we got to see each one of those components in action. We went and we listened to many, many listeners share their responses to the program and how it had impacted their lives. We spent time with several prayer groups, when they talked about how prayer and coming together and praying for themselves, but praying for women all over the world, the power of that. And then we got to go on several just little visits to people's homes and hear and see when they gave gifts and when they prayed and ministered to the people in the Mercy Ministries area. So that was kind of the that kind of encapsulates what we were doing in Africa. And I had asked Shelley to come with me as a photographer, as a writer. Also, if we had no idea exactly what we were going to do, so we had each prepared some teaching or devotional. I knew Shelley was really good at that. She speaks French. All of those things made her an obvious fit to invite and come with me. But the most important thing was Shelley knows me. She knows my struggles. She knows pretty much everything about me. And she's one of my dearest friends. So, wow, to have her on that journey and support me. And you need support on these journeys. So it was a true gift to have Shelley share this experience with me. And the other thing, if you're rooming in Africa with someone and you get sick, it's really great to have someone that loves you already and knows you. You really need to be comfortable. I think we went far beyond what most relationships would be forced to endure. Enough said.
We know each other way too well, is what I'd like to say. All right. Well, as Colleen said, she asked me to come to accompany her on this trip to West Africa. The first phone call I had about it was January 25th, not that many weeks before we were to go. And honestly, I was quite dismissive about the idea on the phone. I told her that I wasn't sure it was the right time for me to go. And we talked for a long time about it. And then when I hung up, she said, okay, that's fine. I hung up and went out to my husband, who was in the garage, and told him about the call. And he immediately said, why not? And I'm like, why not? I'll tell you why not. And I gave him my list of reasons. And he had an answer for every one of my reasons for not going. Not only that, he immediately came into the house, got looking on flight arrangements. He said, you know you're flying through Paris? Okay. And told me what I would need with respect to visas. All the documentation, visas, and so on. So I called Colleen back and said, okay, this was Al's reaction, and I think she said, I like that man. So I suggested to her that we talk more about it the next day, and we did. We had a good conversation. I needed to know what my role would be, and as Colleen said, primarily it was to be a companion and support to her, but there would be other opportunities for me to serve as well. And she needed to know soon, like maybe even the next day or 2 days later. So I told her, Colleen, my answer will depend on my dad's response. Dad is almost 85, and he has Parkinson's disease, and his health has rapidly declined in the past 2 years. Anxiety is a nearly constant companion for him, and I didn't want to add to that anxiety by going to someplace like Africa. Al and I had already traveled a lot this year, and I just wasn't sure that he was up to one more trip. So I told her I would not call him until the next day because it was evening by the time we finished our call. I knew that he wouldn't sleep if I called him. And so I went to bed that night and I woke up in the middle of the night as I do most often because I need to. But I think also because the Lord has always awakened me at the time when I think Dad is the most vulnerable, close to 3 a.m. He gets up every night at 3 to go to the bathroom and also to take the medication that's so necessary for him. And so as I walked to the bathroom, I imagined myself in his place, taking one step after another, and I was praying for him. And the words that came out of my mouth were this, that God would preserve his going out and his coming in. And I'm like, what? Those are not my words. And so I began to think, and I remembered back to a verse that must have been tucked away in my memory. And the verse, as I recalled, it was in the King James Version, which I have not read in any serious way for 30 years. I returned to bed convinced that God had actually given me a promise for Dad. And that promise is in Psalm 121, verse 8. The Lord will preserve your going out and your coming in from this time forth and even forevermore. When I got up in the morning, I emailed Dad and I shared with him the promise that God had given me to reassure him that God would guard and protect and watch over him. Those are the words that are used in alternate translations. And I sent the email off, and when Al came down in the morning, I told him about it, and he said, Shelley, were you thinking about Africa through the night? And I said, not at all. And he said, I really think that promise pertains not just to your dad, but also to you. And I think it pertains to the trip to Africa. I called my dad mid-morning and shared with him the opportunity that I had. I asked him to think about it. I asked him to pray about it, and as usual, I found his voice to be very weak, because that's one of the ways that Parkinson's has affected him. He had not yet seen my email. I asked him to look at it, and I told him I'd call him back that night. And when I did, I said, "Dad, I'm calling to get your counsel about this decision." And to my surprise, my dad had his big old voice back. He was my old dad, the strong dad of my youth. He said to me, "Shelley, you weren't looking for an opportunity. God has opened a door, and I'm telling you, walk through that door." He said it that emphatically. I told him I needed him to release me to go, and he said to me, "I release you to go." And then he spoke a blessing to me. I said to him, "Dad, once I'm committed, I can't come back. I can't cancel out." And he said, "Go." And I knew that I would be going. A few weeks later, I visited a travel clinic. I met Dr. Ruth Benn, who's here this morning. She's a lovely, gentle woman, and I had been told that she was a believer. I wouldn't have needed to know that. It was really obvious to me when I met her. She asked me about the nature of the trip. I told her about it, and it turns out that the church she grew up in supported the work of Trans World Radio, and specifically that of Ray Allery, who would be going with us. I also told her about Dad and the promise that God had given me, and my own concern for myself that I do far too much in my own strength. And this is what she did. She said, "Can I pray for you?" She took my hand, and with tears streaming from her eyes, she prayed for me. And God used her to affirm again that I was to go. She said to me, "Here's my email address. Will you share with me the link to the blog, because I'd like to follow along on the journey?" And I did.
Shelley actually emailed or texted me right after that appointment and said, "I just had the most amazing appointment at the travel clinic." What am I talking myself into? Who am I going with? This is, anyway, if that's her level of excitement, okay.
Yeah, it is. So,
I did get the rest of it then, and it was pretty amazing. But this is the hard part for me to share. But to put things into context for why this trip was what it was to me, you need to understand something about me. This will come as no surprise to people that know me well, but I like structure. I like to know what to expect. I like to have some measure of control. I like to have all my ducks in a row, so no surprises is really good for me. I've also had quite a battle with fear and anxiety. And about 3 years ago, that fear and anxiety were very intense, and they were beginning to take control and be very consuming. So enough about that, but I'm really happy to say that in the past couple years, God has done a tremendous work of healing in my life, and the impact of fear and anxiety is significantly less. It continues to be a battle at times, but it's far less often and far less intense. So I have learned also through that to go to God much quicker, and it's just been a huge relief to me. So I'm learning to trust Him in all things, working on trusting His plan more than mine. And this alone is really, really freeing, because guess what? I don't have to be responsible for it all. That is awesome. I don't have to have all the details. So what I'm learning is to go to Him and look to Him, not my circumstances. He has proven Himself again and again to be faithful and even trustworthy. So who knew? God is amazing. So the other thing is, I like to stay home. I'm a homebody. I like my comfort zone. And I know, Deb, you probably can't even begin to comprehend that if you said this morning. Some of you just don't get that I'm not into adventure like this. So we'll just have to agree to not understand each other, I think. But so here I was with all that background, and I was given the opportunity to go back to Africa, specifically the Ivory Coast this time, and Mali. Okay, God, it's enough that I'm leaving my comfort zone, but now you're making me go to a country that has a travel advisory. And since 2012, there's been a travel advisory against advising Canadians for non-essential travel to Mali because of threats from Islamic insurgents in the north, and there were warnings of banditry and kidnapping. And this was in the area that we were going to be, not the Islamic part, but the banditry and kidnapping. And there was something else I can't remember. So my mind did the usual thinking of listing everything that could possibly go wrong. It turns out I'm incredibly creative. So we did talk to missionaries there on the ground, the people we would be working with. And I knew I was traveling with Ray, my boss, who has lived in Africa and traveled many, many times to these places. Plus, we would be with nationals, people from the country, and nobody was going to put us in danger. So that brought some peace, and I was actually excited a little bit, occasionally, about going. So I felt peace, though, about it, and I've learned, even if you have to struggle fear and stuff, if that underlying peace and you are confident in what God is telling you to do, then I'm totally fine doing that. I can fight through the rest of it with him. So the week prior to going, the news started reporting in West Africa that they were experiencing an Ebola outbreak. And Ebola is a serious virus, which is almost always fatal. Yikes. So, and you die. Like, seriously, fatal, dead, die quick and fast. So I thought, wow. So in the reports, I just want to make sure you got the dead. Yeah? Okay. So the reports we were hearing on the media were also saying that, questioning whether Africa was doing enough to stop it. So we decided, it was still a week, we could always cancel, we'll watch and see what happens. And I was again, totally fine with that. But I knew that I also needed God to meet me in that situation. So we were to leave on a Tuesday, and it was the Friday before. And on the way to work, I'm mulling this over, probably fretting a little bit. And as I drove to work, the Lord gave me the song that you heard on the video, "He is with us," by Love and the Outcome. And they also did a tiny interview of the artists who had, if I've got it right and remember, the Lord asked them to basically sell everything and go on tour. And he gave them Joshua 1:9, "Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will go with you wherever you go," or will be with you wherever you go. So I immediately thought, yep, that's it. That's my verse. That's my song. I'm going to stand on that. And the next day, somebody actually emailed me that verse and said, "This verse is for you." And it was somebody that had actually advised us not to go, rather strongly not to go. So she gave me that verse anyway. So that was Friday morning. By midday, we had learned that there were now 3 suspected cases of Ebola in Mali. So this is 3 days before our departure, so kind of ramped up. What are we going to do now?
The next day, Colleen and I talked, and we learned that no decision about the trip would be made until Monday, the day before the trip. Nothing could be done about our tickets. And so as we talked, we decided that we would pray for 2 things. The first, that we would hear from those on the ground in Mali. An email had gone out, but no response had come back. And secondly, I told her that I was going to be so bold to email Dr. Ben, whose email I had for one purpose, which was to send a blog link to her, which I had not yet done. Now, that was awfully presumptuous of me to think that I could call on a doctor for an opinion in something like this, but I felt like I needed to do it, and so I sent the email off and we prayed about it. And with hours, we heard from Molly. Things were in place for our arrival, and they would have been very disappointed if we had not come. The opinion they gave us was that the media had overreacted, and that we were not in any danger. I went to see my dad for the last time before the trip and decided not to tell him about Ebola or about the decision that we were facing, and I found him that day to be unusually anxious. While I was there, I received an email from Dr. Ben, and she affirmed that the World Health Organization and the Center for Disease Control had not yet restricted travel to West Africa. So I was bold again. I wrote her back and said, "Okay, if you were in our shoes, what would you do?" As I said goodbye to my dad, I shared with him the promise God had given me that morning from Isaiah 41. "You are my servant. I have chosen you and have not rejected you. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. For I am the Lord, your God, who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, 'Do not fear, I will help you.'" When I told my dad that, he said to me, "Shelley, we are going to stand on the promises of God while you're gone." And together, with full eye contact, we sang that old hymn, "Standing on the Promises of God." On my way back home, I heard back from Dr. Ben, and she said that her decision would depend on whether or not she had heard from and believed that God had called her to go. If so, she said she would go, and she'd take the necessary precautions. But more important than that advice, she told us that she was praying for us as we made our decision. And this is what she was praying. Psalm 121 and Isaiah 41:9-10. Is this significant? Yes. Colleen had just been given Psalm 121 from a friend in the office, I think that very day. The final verse of the psalm was the one that God gave me concerning my dad, and if Al's right about the trip to Africa. And the verses from Isaiah are the ones that I had just shared with my dad that morning, the ones that God had given me that day.
I had posted the verse that Shelley gave me about preserving our coming and going. I posted it on the fridge earlier. And I remember the Friday night I looked at it and just, oh, God, you're going to make me go, aren't you? Odd thing is, there was still some sense of disappointment if we didn't go. I mean, I was happy to miss the scary part, but I knew I was supposed to go. So it was a really, really intense weekend. But for the most part, again, I did feel that peace, even though there was that fear to battle. But by the end of the weekend, I was convinced. I was walking with my friend and I said, you know what? Even if I die there, I know that I'm supposed to go there and I'm supposed to die there if that's what the Lord wants for me right now. So I did have a tremendous sense of confidence in going and in peace that God had given me. But I did kind of ask God, why did you have to throw the Ebola thing in? Like, seriously, I'm going. But anyway, he added that extra element. And as I thought about it later and even during the trip, I thought, you know what, God was actually kind even in that, because he reaffirmed and he confirmed all through that weekend that this was what we were supposed to do. This was the journey. So, you know what, it was totally fine. So I am even thankful for that. And I'm certainly thankful for all the ways that he confirmed that. And he continued to confirm that. So the day before we were leaving, I looked ahead in my devotional, because I'm, what is he going to say tomorrow? And it was really great, because it was Genesis 28:15. I am with you, and I will watch over you wherever you will go, and I will bring you back to this land. Well, why is he going to die over there? I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. So he was going to preserve me, he was going to bring me home. And again, just how kind of God, how incredibly kind. He knows how weak I am. And I think I said that morning to a friend, I am weak and broken vessel, so I guess I'm ready to go. And that's about how it happened. So I just want to, you know, declare how good and kind God is in all these things.
April 8th, the day of our departure, the promise that came to me that day from my Bible reading and the promise on which I intended to stand was found in Psalm 23:4. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. If any truth is prominent in my mind as I go, I knew that it was that God goes with us. But I also knew that as much as he went with us, we were not taking his presence away from those that we left behind. He was with us, but he was also with those that we loved, with our husbands, with our children and grandchildren, and with our parents, and what a comfort that was. My response to that promise was found as I continued to read in his word. Psalm 26:3 says, "Your steadfast love is before my eyes, and I walk in your faithfulness." In my final call to Dad that day, he sings to me the song, "God Will Take Care of You." And as he sings the last line, he adds, "God will take care of me." I was fully affirmed in the will of God for this journey, and so was my friend Colleen. And we looked forward with anticipation to what God had in mind to teach us along the way.
Just as a side, Shelley's dad every day had a song for us when we were in Africa, and it was really, really neat. He definitely came with us on his knees and through him just finding songs for us. Many of you have gone on journeys like this, and you know you come away with a ton to process. We've actually only been back a week, and my head is still spinning, but you come back and you go, what have I learned? What impact? What am I supposed to do with all this? And really, what was that all about? So one of the biggest things for me, and I've alluded to it a little bit, is just continuing to stand on God's promises and keep my mind focused on him, not my circumstances. And you've seen how that played out leading up to the trip. You know that going there wasn't always easy for me. And it was a wonderful journey, but it was difficult. If nothing else, it was really hard work. The days were really long and really hot and emotionally exhausting. I had trouble sleeping pretty much the whole trip. And there was just a lot going on in my head. Those people I met during the day just marched back and forth in my brain all night long. And then you saw there were snakes and there were lizards. Seriously, did you get that? I opened the toilet and there was a lizard in it. That, I just went and got my camera. But and then I left. And they said, oh, good, you found it. We were wondering where that was. Anything else I need to know? So that was okay. But then there was a night that we lost power. And this happened lots, or several times. But the second night we were there, I still was really overwhelmed and not really comfortable. We were in separate rooms in a hotel that, in an area, I'm sure it was totally safe, but I wasn't feeling all that safe. And the hydro went out in the middle of the night, and I woke up, and I didn't feel safe, I didn't feel comfortable, but it was way too dark and way too scary to get out of bed and go find Shelley's bedroom. So I had to stay put. And that night, before I had gone to sleep, I'd read out loud Psalms 91, and I'd made it personal. I'd put my name, or I'd put me, my, whatever, in it throughout. So when I woke up in the middle of the night, that was still all there. Certainly don't know it by heart in any way, but the things I could remember, I could say, and again, put my focus on God. Because when you're in the middle of the night, and it's dark, and you're feeling vulnerable, I have, a particularly impressive imagination, and I would guess any one of you do at that stage. So Shelley suggested that I read to you Psalms 91. Are we okay for time? It's a little bit long, but really listen to whatever journey you're on. This is good stuff. So it starts, whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely He will save Colleen from the fowler's snare and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover me with His feathers, and under His wings I will find refuge. His faithfulness will be my shield and rampart. I will not fear the terror by night, nor the arrows that fly by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in the darkness. Those would be lizards. I seriously left the light on because there was no way I was stepping on a lizard when I got out of bed in the middle of the night. 1,000 may fall at my side, 10,000 at my right hand, but it will not come near me. I will only observe with my eyes and see the punishment of the wicked. If I say the Lord is my refuge and I make the Most High my dwelling, no harm will overtake me. No disaster will come near my tent. For He will command His angels concerning me to guard me in all my ways. They will lift me in their hands, so I will not strike my foot against a stone. I will tread on the lion and the cobra. I will trample the great lion and the serpent. Because He loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue him. I will protect him, for he acknowledges my name. He will call on me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. Seriously, we should say amen. Amen. So as I talked to God that night, I just felt increasingly more at peace. He really did trouble my quiet heart. And had I not gone on this journey, I would have missed that. I would have missed another opportunity to lean on God and stand on His promises. And I would have missed another opportunity for Him to reveal, even at a deeper level, that He really is my refuge and my strength. And I would have missed seeing what I went to see, is how God is using Project Hannah. It's something I believe so strongly in. I give a fair bit of my time to it. And I would have missed seeing the impact that it's having. Because it's easy to sit here in my office and lose sight of what is going on in the lives of women on the ground, over there in their little huts or wherever they are. And now I am more convinced than ever that God is using the ministry to change lives. He's reaching down to the brokenhearted, those scared, lonely, desperate women, and He's showing them in His great love that He's inviting them to come and be healed. He's pouring out His love, and He's doing that through some incredible women that are working with the ministry who are giving beyond what I can imagine giving in their resources, their time, and their love and encouragement. And I've just seen so much of that and been so encouraged to continue persevering in what I do here. And I do want to take time to share one story with you because it had a profound impact. It was, I guess, the second day sort of on the ground. And we went out, we were in Abidjan, and we went to a poor district to visit a young mom with a four-week-old baby. And all we were told was her name was Sandrine, and she was HIV positive. And we really had no idea what to expect. And there were quite a number of us going, so I can't imagine what that looked like in the village. But anyway, she told us her story, and she had been left alone with two kids, and now this third one on the way. The guy involved just left her, and that's quite common. So she was pregnant. She had no job, no welfare, no money. There's really nobody to help. And I think I was really struck here if something like that happens. We've got welfare, or we've got family, we've got friends, but absolutely alone. And that's probably what broke my heart the most. Because what do you do? There's no hope. There's nowhere to go. So in her desperation, her answer was to take her life and the life of her unborn baby. She went to a busy intersection at night, and it was pouring rain, and she waited to be hit by a car. And even as she was telling us, she seemed completely dazed that car after car swerved her around her and didn't kill her, didn't hit her. Now, for our perspective, that seems a really odd way to try to end your life. But I was actually at that intersection. And many of the intersections, they're really different from here. I probably seriously was going to die in a traffic accident more than any other way. There's no traffic lights. They just somehow go. And I don't know, there's just a lot of traffic. So at night, it's completely dark, and it was raining and slippery and stuff. So it made lots of sense how that might end her life. So she couldn't get hit, so she gave up and went home. And when she got home, she turned on the radio, and it was the Women of Hope program. That's true, I'm not making that up. It's just, that's our program. And at the end of the program, there's a number to call. So she called the office, and that very first seed of hope was planted. And after the call, the staff went out to meet with her. They convinced her to take care of herself, get back on her medication. They encouraged her, they prayed with her, and they gave what assistance they could in very practical ways. And through each one of these demonstrations of love, that little tiny seed of hope was watered, and she was more and more encouraged. So when we met her, her and her baby were healthy. And we got to kiss her and hug her and hold that little baby. And now with the help of an NGO, she's begun a small business of selling ice from her home. They gave her a freezer and helped set her up. And this provides her independence, and it provides her with an income to take care of her family so she can start getting out of that cycle of poverty. And the confidence and the encouragement that that can give her, it gives her value. So the team has continued to encourage her and visit her, and we went and we gave her a media player which had a Bible and the New Testament and several programs, and they gave her a baby bed and some food things. And when she was talking, none of us were dry-eyed. It was a really touching story because she was very much still hurting, but there was that joy, there was that little bit of hope coming up. So we saw her pain and her joy, and I did weep. I don't know, there's one picture where I think I sent it to Kevin, and he said, "Were you crying right before that picture?" I said, "Oh, yeah." So, but you know what happened? God said to me at that moment, he said, "See, I brought you to Africa to break your heart with the things that break mine." And I needed that.
A little over a week after returning from West Africa, it's hard to summarize and articulate what I have learned from this. There have been so many lessons. I've learned that there is hope in the most hopeless circumstances. There are situations in my life that seem hopeless to me right now, and undoubtedly some of you feel the same way. But seeing the hopelessness that surrounds, especially the women that we had contact with, and seeing the hope that they have found in Christ that radiates from their face, and about which many of them spoke, I'm encouraged to stand firm and to continue to pray. Nothing and no one is beyond the reach of our great God. I've also learned that as we travel with the King, it's important to know without a doubt that he is always with us. His presence was the promise we took with us, and it sustained us and it comforted us each day, and it propelled us to do the work we've been called to do. But how glad I am to know that God often provides another to accompany and to share the journey with us as we go. When we left for Africa, I knew I was going in part as a companion to Colleen, and I prayed that God would enable me to encourage her and to support her in the work that she was doing. It was amazing to watch this beautiful woman in action, and it was a privilege to be there with her. But I didn't know how much I would need her support. A few hours after we took off, I fainted on the plane. I landed on her, and it awakened her, and she was amazing. She was slapping my face.
They do that in the movies, right?
And it worked. Apparently it worked. But halfway through the trip, I also succumbed to a nasty GI bug, and I felt unwell for the next 2 or 3 days. During that same time, Colleen was not feeling well either, but she showed me exceptional kindness, and we got through those days together. I was really humbled yesterday to learn that this dear friend, in her love and concern for me, undertook to clean the dirty toilet in our bathroom. I mean, what friend does this? And I was reminded of the verses in Ecclesiastes 4 that say two are better than one. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up, but pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. How grateful I am to have shared this journey with my friend. God was the third strand on the journey. We could not have made the trip without him. He was, and he is our strength. But neither would I have wanted to travel without one another. It's always better to share the journey with a friend. I also learned that I can impact the life of another in very simple ways. I don't need to be a teacher of God's word to have an influence on another woman, as much as I love to do that. I don't need to have an ongoing relationship with someone else to influence her, although nothing replaces that. I can impact and influence the life of another by just being where God has called me to be for the time that he's called me to be there. Will my time in Africa really make a difference in the lives of these women and children? I don't know. It's not always easy to measure these things in tangible ways. It was our hope that we would be able to give voice to these women, to their suffering and to their pain, and to their hope by sharing their stories with others. I was able to take a lot of pictures and to tell a few of their stories, but my reach is so limited to my family, to my friends, to a few Facebook friends, so I don't know what the impact is. But perhaps the greatest impact came from being part of a team of women who, through acts of kindness, showed that they cared. What does it mean to a widow who has 7 children, to have someone show up at her door with a few bags of rice, a bag of salt, a bottle of cooking oil, and some tomato paste? Not much if she lives in London, Ontario, but if she lives in West Africa in unspeakable poverty, without a job, without a system to support her, it means a lot. And the look on their faces indicated that it did. Now that I'm home, I don't want to miss out on all the little things that God has in mind for me to do for him. Before leaving, Colleen and I were so aware that there was very little we could say to the women whose lives are filled with such suffering. Ultimately, it may be that our ministry among these beautiful women and children was one of smiles and hugs and tears. As we traveled to Africa, our God traveled with us. We were assured of his presence every day and in every circumstance. He taught us to trust him and to depend on him in situations that really stretched us. We've both said that it's been hard this past week to process all that happened during those 9 days. But this journey has come to an end, and we are trusting in Jesus, our King, to take the little gifts that we offered to him, the gifts of our time, our energy, our resources, our strength, and to bless what we've done in his name for his honor and for his glory.